Welcome to C-Suite Hot Seat, the show where we put C-level executives from language service providers of all sizes in the hot seat. We will ask tough questions and get inspired answers.
My name is Inge Bohne. I am the Chief Growth Officer here at NIMC Insights.
And I am Laszlo Varga, and I'm Senior Consultant and Researcher at NIMC. And today in our hot seat, we have Xavier Mazacid, Global Client Solutions Manager at iDesk. Hi, Xavi. Lovely to have you here.
Hello. Nice. Thank you very much.
Hi, Xavi. So are you ready for it? Shall we do this?
Yeah, okay.
So Xavi, tell me in one sentence, what is it actually that iDesk does?
We help communicate on a broad basis. We started as a software development company, and doing content and management software. And then we started doing translations, and that makes us think that we help communicate. Right now, we're specialists in content management systems and also in cybersecurity, so protecting that content. And also, of course, because we're a language company, getting those contents into from one source into other targets to help people communicate. So that's why we say we like to think ourselves as a company that helps communicate. And our motto says making communication easy. So overall, the whole thing works as a way to communicate.
That makes sense. I like that. And currently, you are the Global Client Solutions Manager at iDesk. When you were a child, was this the type of career that you were dreaming of? Or what was it that you would have liked to become?
I would have never thought that I would end up as a salesperson, which actually it is what I am. I'm a salesperson now. I like to disguise it as a global client something. But I'm a salesperson. And what I learned over the years is sales techniques. And that's what I'm mostly interested in selling, new selling techniques. When I was a kid, I dreamt probably about being an astronaut. That's very typical myself. And the only thing that I really wanted was traveling and getting to know cultures and talking to people, even though I was a very shy boy. So, and that evolved into translation and communicating and talking to people and traveling. And this sales role in my company has allowed me to travel a lot, to many conferences, to visit many customers, to many different countries, and learn a lot. And somehow that helped fulfill this old feeling of being a person, a traveler, a sailor. I was thinking that was the easiest way to travel at that time. The astronaut thing kept somewhere, and I fulfilled it by becoming a scuba diver. So several years ago, I started doing scuba diving, and I developed and become a scuba diving instructor for several different certification agencies. And I trained lots of students as well. But I learned that once you are in the water, especially at night, which is something that I really like, dark night, when you're floating there with your scuba diving gear, the thing, and breathing, it's the closest I'll ever get to becoming an astronaut and being in the outer space.
Wow, because you're floating in the dark, so you're emulating
that. The calamari getting closer to you, and Jesus, that's the closest to an alien encounter.
Fantastic. I love that. And we see a lot of cameras there in the background. So when you're not working, are you mainly spending your time diving or also taking pictures? Is photography still a hobby?
Yeah, I like very much taking pictures. I think that I've always been fascinated by mechanical things, complex mechanical things. So when I think about it, cameras, watches, machinery, cars, and motorbikes. So when I'm not working, I usually go around with my motorbike with my friends. And we just came back last weekend from a long tour around the Majorca island, just riding, enjoying the landscape, or of course, taking pictures using a camera. I've been taking pictures all my life. Now I use a mobile phone because we have to adapt to technology, and it allows me to take pictures anytime, anywhere. But I still keep my old cameras and the collection that I've made all over the year, because I'm also kind of a collector.
Wow,
Apparently.
fantastic. And you said that you like to travel, so you've probably seen already a lot of places, but what are like maybe three countries that you haven't been to yet, and or well, that you would like to visit again? If you can only choose three, which ones would you choose and why?
Japan is a country that I'm fascinated. I've been several times there, and it's always surprising. And everything is so perfect, well thought. I don't know. It's like a piece of machinery, very complex. And I like Japan very much. So I always say, if I get lost sometime and they don't know where I am, go to Japan and look for me, but I'm probably there. The other, I also like very much the wild adventure kind of thing that meant the United States in the 19th century, probably. That disappeared. But I have the feeling that it is still out there somewhere in Australia. I've never been there, but probably that's a country I'd like to visit just to see a bit that kind of old-time, old-fashioned wilderness. So Australia would be also a destination. And then I also have very fond memories when I was studying in Denmark. When I was 20 years old, I went to the Handelshøjskolen in Copenhagen, and I studied there for 2 years. So Denmark is a country that's very dear to me, and I always like to go from time to time there. So Denmark would be also the country, the third one.
Fantastic. Yeah, I love those destinations. Thank you for sharing that. And my last question is, what's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
Shut up and listen. I like shut up and listen. It's over these years, it's the one that works the most. When you talk, you're just pushing information, right? But if you stop and listen, you're getting richer yourself, but it's just listening to the people around you. So the best advice is always shut up and listen.
I love that. Thank you so much.
Okay, so maybe we could go on to more professional questions, and they can get a little tough here and there. So, Chavi, when you started your business 30 years ago, when did you realize that this is actually going to work? What was your breakthrough, the aha moment to say, yes, there is actually meaningful value in it to do for life?
I was traveling. Actually, when I started, that was what I wanted. So I wanted to travel. And I saw that I was going everywhere and I was talking to people and I was learning a lot. So to me, that was a feeling that allowed me to say, this is the right thing. I'm doing the right thing. I'm in the right place. I was watching other colleagues, what they were doing, people that we studied together. And I saw them working as translators from home. And then I saw myself moving around and I said, hey, I am doing the right thing.
Right. But there must have been a point when you thought, well, there is not only an individual life, but there is a role where you can become a leader at your organization at IDIS. How did that come about?
I started taking roles as a project manager and managing people, and I saw that I had learned certain things and I had a knowledge advantage. Always, it's important to have certain knowledge advantage, so I could lead people and tell and advise them. And I was lucky to be at the right time at the right place. We started getting interesting projects, and I was leading them. So yeah, this company started to grow. So from a small software development company, very local, selling to local companies, we started working with very well-known names and projects that involved very big names. So when I was also with other friends doing other jobs in in other industries, I would tell, oh, I'm working with this company with blah, 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 blah. These are the big names. They would immediately recognize that. So I thought, yes, we're going into the right way.
How has growth been for you for the last 30 years? We keep saying that the industry is resilient. Individual companies may experience it differently, though.
Our approach has been doing things very well and being very approachable. So we are a small company. We are kind of family oriented because it started as a family and now we are partners, but we share this family approach. And we've been growing with that focus on trying to do things very well and feeling that we're doing the right thing. So this means that we didn't have a huge growth. We focused on delivering very professional, high quality things. So this meant that yes, we've been growing over the last 30 years, definitely we have, and we have managed to work and deliver good services, feel comfortable, feel we're doing the right things. And working with that kind of approach in mind. So growth has not been huge, like companies duplicating their turnover every year. But I think we are well known for taking care and being very, very careful with what we do.
Right. And certainly there must have been some setbacks, some failures, and some learnings from those, right? Would you be happy to share some of those failures, maybe the biggest one of all?
Yeah, the biggest failure is always when you invest time and money and resources in one line of a project or in some kind of expertise that you think you're going to be leveraging in the future, and that only happens once. There have been many projects in which you required us getting trained and getting special resources to do something, and that never happened again. That's somehow disappointing.
There are must have been times when you feel like you're on the right track, and there must be times when you feel you're wasting your time on things, even day to day. So what are the biggest time wasters in your organization?
One might can think that when I'm talking to customers and they come and they explain to you sometimes some very confusing and fuzzy things, and you're trying to just address them or explain. Some of our customers are from our own industry, so they know really well what they want, but some others are not, and they really don't have a clue, and they have needs. And then you just spend time there telling them, trying to make a proposal. Sometimes proposals take months, or you have to develop over time, and then suddenly things inexplicably disappear or fade away. That's certainly disappointing.
Actually, what are the three key things that you spend your day-to-day workday on?
Okay, one, the main, as a leader of a team, or we call it the client solutions team, which is made up of account managers that deal with different customers, different type of customers in different industries. My role there is to just, of course, generally set up goals and try to follow up and make sure that we're reaching them and that people have the right tools, the right resources, that are ready to do their job and meet their goals. And also that they have their the feeling that they are comfortable doing that. So they actually, there's a lot of work involving talking to different people to make sure that everything is right. Not just checking numbers or goals or KPIs, but also making sure that people are in the good mood to work on what they must do. That means a lot of communication too. Besides setting goals and KPIs, there's also a role related to the culture, nurturing the people, making sure that they are all comfortable. And that means a lot of communication, a lot of talking.
In light of that, what does success mean to you? I mean, personally, as well as for your team?
That's a very, very interesting question. What is success? Because success, in a way, to me, it's not something that like you reach and then suddenly, oh, yes, I am successful here. I can take it. It is not. Again, it's like the happiness thing. It's a process that it's made up of thousands of little things, and it's a thing that evolves. Being successful to me would be like knowing that you're doing the right thing every time. And when I think, am I doing the right time now? Yes. Then I can feel successful. And that relates also to all the surrounding things around me, because I cannot control everything. Even if I can try, there are many things in the market, in the environment, in my colleagues, in the company, in the industry, in the world, whatever, that are out of my control. But I need to be sure that I'm doing the right thing at every time. If I look into myself and can say that, yes, I am doing the right thing, then I can feel that I'm successful.
I doubt
Fantastic. Thank you for answering that. What makes you a good leader? And connected question is, where did you learn to become a leader from? Do you have a mentor, or do you have books and resources that you would recommend?
I don't think I'm a leader at all. As I
Sounds
said,
like you are.
As I
want
said,
it or not.
Yep. That is very embarrassing. I probably a shy guy in me. There was a little kid. It was very shy. I didn't talk that much. Has learned all over the years, because I have confidence in my skills and I have confidence in what I've learned. It allowed me to just be more expansive and talk to people this might generate some kind of leading aura. I don't know. But I guess it's being confident in your knowledge. Even if it's small, you can be a leader in that small area because you are very well, you have very good knowledge. It is a tricky question.
Definitely is. Do you have any learning sources, a mentor or an example that you look up to that you learn from?
Not really. There are people, but everyone is different. I mean, my partner, Pere, is very different from me, but he has been a source of inspiration for many, many things that I've been thinking again and again over the years. Also, for instance, Renato. I've known Renato for a long, long time, and I've had many chances to talk to him. So I can see those good things that he has, and I'm trying to do something similar, I guess. So yeah, people that you look at and you see certain good skills that you might try to imitate.
Right, so what were the key lessons that you have learned throughout your career of 30 years by this?
Be patient. You have to be patient. And you have to keep trying. Failure is constant. And feeling successful, actually, if you like what you do, I mean, and I think I like what I do, and I like being in the language industry. That's why I'm proud to say I'm a translator. I studied translation, that's my background. So I'm happy to say that I'm a translator. That helps carry on after 30 years. I mean, because all over the way, there have been failures and successes, projects that went well, projects that went bad. Things that, we didn't expect, and we learned a lot. And sometimes we just lot money, and we also learn a lot.
But there must be some secret sauce to your success. I mean, you've been in the industry and at your company for 30 years, heading initiatives. What is that secret sauce that keeps you afloat? And what is it that keeps you waking up in the morning to say, I want to keep doing this?
Thinking that I will learn something during the day, it helps me a lot. Because this is like enrichment. I mean, we'll never get rich in this language industry. Somebody will do, I'm sure. There are certain people who have made a lot of money. Most of us were just good professionals that we've made a living, that we can pay our mortgage and have a good living, and I can travel. I have my motorbike, so I'm happy. And on the way, I have this feeling that I'm learning, that I'm still learning. I'm 54. I've been more than 30 years in the industry. But every day, I have a feeling that I learned something. And this, to me, is more important than putting some extra money in the account. Of course, it's important to have money in the account. But learning is actually a driver. To me, it's more important learning than actually making money.
Would you like to share a story with us about your biggest success, if there was one?
I don't know. I'm very happy now, to be honest, because for a long time, our company is small. So when a company is small, everybody does everything, and we all have many different hats. Now that we've grown, my personal feeling of success is that I have a team now. I have account managers, I have junior account managers, I have marketing people in my team that I can talk to. So I've managed to build a team. So in the past, I was like a lonesome rider. I was alone doing many things and talking to customers myself. And now I have a team. We've tried to specialize, use techniques and tools. So I'm very proud of having managed to do that, because that involves training people, leading them, giving them the tools, following up. And then when you see that that starts to work as a mechanism that I'm so happy of, then I'm proud. And I have a feeling of success.
Thank you. Then let's get to a last question. I would like to know, and so would our viewers, what would be the one advice you would give to new business entrepreneurs in the language industry today?
Actually, it's knowledge. You have to learn a lot. So as I was saying, my advice is shut up and listen. Listen. That means going to lots of conferences, talking to a lot of people, and being very open-minded, because success can be hidden in any strange corner with different strange opportunities. When I was a kid, I would have never thought that success or happiness in my professional life would be in language or translation. It has evolved this way. So be open-minded. And nowadays, with so much change, we have to have this kind of open-minded, because things are going to change. And the models, the language models or the industry models that we had as the standard they're going to change a lot now. So the new people coming in that will start working in the next several years, they have to be really open-minded and learn on very different type of knowledge.
That's it. Thank you so much.
Xavi, thanks. That was great.
Thank you for the opportunity.
If anyone else feels like letting off some steam and you're part of the C-suite at the company and the language services industry, do sign up with us if you dare to sit in our hot seat.
Well, that's all, folks, for today. Thank you for watching. And look out for our next episode that will be published as a video on Multilingual TV, as well as a podcast on the NIMSI website.